Beat Writers, and this is the CDOT show. The intro today is just me. I'm doing this late Monday night. I just got back from the Reds' third tie of the spring, and that was with the Rangers. And John's already asleep. He didn't go to the game. We kind of split some of these games up sometimes. His wife's been in town, so he's had a couple days off, and letting him enjoy that. And then Tuesday is the lone off day. It's the day I'm posting this. It's the lone off day of the spring. Off days are they're big in spring, not just for the players and the coaches, but also the riders. I'm going to spend it working, but it's because I've procrastinated on some other things that I need to do. And that's a story for our special section for opening day. And I'm talking about what's an ace. And it's kind of been an interesting discussion that I've had with several people, including, you know, general managers, managers, scouts, and other writers. The definition of an ace is kind of weird, and it's different for everybody. It's almost like the old standard for pornography. It's tough to describe exactly what it is, but you know it when you see it. And this much is for certain, there are not 30 aces in the game. You know, one of my friends, Andy McCullough, who covers the Royals, has it as low as 7, I think. We had a discussion, and he counted them out. Others think there's, you know, maybe 13, 14. But I would say that's the high end. I kind of almost go in the middle of that somewhere. So that'll be interesting. What's for sure is pretty much even Andy puts Johnny Cueto in that category. And that's something the Reds, here in the next week and a half, we'll have to decide. They've probably already decided whether they're going to sign him long term. He said he's not going to negotiate after spring training, and at that point he just considered it that he's going to go on a free agency. So that's still been nothing really new on that. So that's quite interesting. And maybe that means that the Reds have already made their decision. Nobody's told me that. I don't think they would anyway, but it could be that sign. You know, the Homer Bailey deal was done early, although that had the specter of arbitration hanging over. Johnny's still under contract. Anyway, Johnny will be the opening day starter, and it looks like the rotation has been filled out with Mike Leake, of course. Then there's Homer Bailey, but he's going to miss a start or two. So you're going to have Anthony DeSclafani, Jason Marquis, and Raisel Iglesias, which is maybe the surprise of the whole thing. The Reds weren't, they didn't say that he was going to start, but they said they would consider it, and they're going there. Michael Lorenzen also has an outside shot, but it'll be interesting to see if he goes in the bullpen, and that's something we'll be watching over the last week and a half of spring training or so. You know, I'm still trying to figure out the format for this podcast, and you want to give us some timely stuff here at the beginning, but then also get to the interview, and this week's interview was, you know, when I thought about doing this weekly, and I talked about getting some interviews in spring training, this was number one on my list, and that's Eric Davis, because I went to dinner one time, and Eric was at the dinner table as well, and I listened to him talk about several things, including some of the topics we get into on this about African Americans and baseball and all sorts of things, and this was a fun conversation. I say this all the time, that when I was growing up, and I say this in the interview, and I'm not just blowing smoke up Eric's behind, but when was growing up, guy was Superman, and I've always been blown away by how good he was, and I just remember that there was nothing the guy couldn't do. And it's funny, you see him today, and he still looks like he could go on the field and play. It's pretty amazing. And but what you don't know is the depth that this man loves the game and still thinks about the game, and he's still around the game, and a lot of the Reds players are learning from him. I think I could have done, you know, I told him, I asked if he had 20, 25 minutes. I think this is about a half hour. And I could have talked to him for 2 hours easy. That wouldn't have been fair for his time. I'm sure I would have enjoyed it, and hopefully you would have too. But this is Eric Davis. So when I was growing up, I didn't grow up a Reds fan.
Why not?
Because I lived all over the place. I grew up a Royals fan.
Sorry for your loss.
Yeah, but the thing was, I was living in Virginia in the mid to late 80s, and I remember watching SportsCenter every night. Eric Davis was Superman. He was the guy that I was just in awe of at all times. This was, you could do everything. You played a lot of different sports, right, growing up in L.A.?
The first sport I ever played was tennis.
Really?
I took tennis lessons from Arthur Ashe when I was a kid.
From Arthur Ashe?
Yes. I got out of UCLA years ago. When I was in elementary school, and my godmother, who lived out by UCLA, she was Jewish, and I would go out and spend a weekend with her sometimes, and we would go to UCLA, and she gave me a tennis racket, and it seemed like it was a fit for me, and then I was good at it, and she started getting me lessons. And the only thing changed me was they had them Daisy Duke shorts on. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of got laughed at a little bit for wearing the Daisy Duke, so that kind of turned me away from it. But I played basketball, I played baseball, I played football, I ran track, I did everything.
What was your best sport?
Honestly, I don't know.
Yeah? No. Why baseball, then?
Well, it's simple, because I was in a baseball frame of mind when I graduated high school, and that's when the baseball draft is. And I tell everybody all the time that if I would have graduated high school after basketball season, I would have went to college, because I was in that frame of mind. That's what we did. We was going to state and doing a lot of different things, and I was in that frame of mind. And just that basketball was before baseball, and then it just went to baseball, and it fizzled, and then baseball season was in, and then you go to the playoffs and you make all honors in baseball, and you're in that frame of mind. So it was really that close. It was really that touch and go.
Where were you going to go for basketball?
It was out of Arizona State or Pepperdine, because they both was giving me double scholarships.
Really?
Yeah.
Who was the coach at Pepperdine then? Was it Jim Herrick?
Jim Herrick was there, yes.
That's funny. I covered Jim when he was at Georgia. Mm-hmm. He said recruiting to Pepperdine was easy. He'd just go up and show you the view out of his office. Everything's fine.
Especially,
at the
oh my God, it's still nice. It's still beautiful. Yes.
That's funny. He's a big baseball fan, actually.
Jim, he's a big baseball fan, and Dave Gorey was the baseball coach, and they had a really, really nice program. But at one of my high school guys who just got elected into the WCC Hall of Honor, Dane Soto was a year ahead of me, and we played high school ball together. We grew up together, and he went to Pepperdine. Actually, he's the all-time leading scorer as of today. And so I was just following him footsteps. And when you're in high school and you're young from South Central LA and you see somebody that go out of college, it kind of inspires you that there's an opportunity. And the same schools were looking at him when he was a senior, was watching me. And one thing led to another. And I was just grateful that I had those kind of opportunities.
Right, because, I mean, that's one thing you always think about is with baseball, there's that opportunity right away to make money.
And not back then.
But, I mean, you would be getting paid. Mm-hmm. I mean, not the money that now. I mean,
I don't know if you're talking about $600 a month making money, but I was getting in college, probably.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Some of them guys was driving nice cars in college, so I don't know. I don't want to spill the beans on y'all, but you know, they was doing their thing.
Do you think you would have been a professional basketball player if you would have pursued it?
No doubt. Absolutely.
You still play?
Not like I used to, because a lot of guys that played in the league and was great in D1, I played against them when I was kids. And stuff. So when you play against them, and then the players in L.A. were so talented, Byron Scott and Jay Humphries and all of those guys were all there, and we all grew up playing together. So it was no different. If I would have pursued it, yeah, absolutely.
I believe it. Did you play football? How long did you play football?
I got recruited to high school to play football, and then I got into it with the coach and didn't play. It's because, see, when I went to high school as a sophomore, that's back when high school started as a sophomore then, I was only like 155 pounds, but I was the fastest guy, and I was recruited to play wide receiver. And all my patterns was across the middle, 5 foot drops. And see, back in the 70s, high school football was huge. Guys were big. If you see a lot of high school guys now, your lineman is 170 pounds, 180 pounds in some of these schools and stuff like that. But back then, guys were legitimate, like high school players. They were big. And they, even though I was a little guy, all of my patterns was like 5 yard slants. I was like, dude, you're going to get me killed out here. You know what I mean? He was like, well, you got to wait your turn. I was like, no, I'm going to the basketball court.
It's nice to have options.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's your true love of sports? Was there one or
no?
You're kind of polyamorous.
I'm just a sports fan. I'm just a major team sport type of guy. I don't really watch golf a whole lot. I'm a boxing fan. Love the field events and track and field and stuff like that. But I don't prefer one over the other.
Yeah.
Because I think each sport that I played growing up gave me something that the other sport didn't give. I got my mental toughness from playing football. I got my athletic ability on the baseball diamond from playing basketball. Lateral movement, quick hands, dribbling and stuff. That helps my bat speed. A lot of different attributes in other sports gave me something that the other sports couldn't give.
So that make you look around and you see kids a lot of times specialize so young now. Do you think that holds guys back?
Well, they're making them specialize. I don't think kids want to be specialized. I think parents specialize them. I think you have a lot of these programs who think that the program is so big that if the kid don't play year-round, he don't have a chance to make your team, which is hurting a lot of these kids because that's when you're starting to see, especially in baseball, you're starting to see kids having Tommy John at 16. That's unheard of. That shouldn't happen. You know, these kids in Little League now and AAU ball is playing 115, 120 games. That's a lot of baseball, you know what I'm saying? Just to focus on baseball. And then you get them when they get to a certain age, a lot of them get burnt out. Mm-hmm. And then they have nothing else to fall back on. But me, I'm for that. Let them play whatever they want to play and let their athletic ability will choose where they go. You're not going to choose where they go.
Right. That makes sense. I mean, yours took you to baseball. You were a guy that did everything.
I took pride in that.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. I took pride in running the bases. I took pride in defense. I took pride in throwing. I'd rather rob a home run than hit one. You know, because everybody can hit them. It was just something about going over the wall. It just wasn't for me. It was for that guy that was on the mound.
Mm-hmm.
And when he like, damn it, and then they see me go, it's like, oh, it brings him back there. It's a great feeling because he's out there busting his tail, too. And then when I can make that play, save him two or three runs or save the game with that, oh, I got a rush out of that. And going from first to third, I got a rush.
Really?
Oh, scoring from first on the double. Oh, man, that was fun. It's something when people try to prevent you from doing something and you still succeed at it. That's a tremendous rush. And I took pride in stealing bases, but I took more pride from the seventh inning on because that's when everybody's trying to stop you. They throw over 18 times, they slide step, they do all that. As soon as they go home, you steal it, stick your chest out on that.
80 stolen bases. Mm-hmm. You had 80 stolen bases 1 year mm-hmm. with 25 homers.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys to do that,
mm-hmm.
you and Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
Does it do you like miss seeing guys steal bases in baseball nowadays? Because that's a fun. That's a, as someone watching the game.
As a fan, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And that's a part of the game that has to be in you. You have to want to steal bases. You have to enjoy it. I enjoy everybody talking and moving. And when I get on base, the catcher go to the mound, the pitcher go to the mound, the second baseman, everybody having a powwow. I'm like, all that for me? Hey, you know. And then when they try to do everything to prevent it, and then you still steal the base, it's like a big, okay, so what y'all gonna do next, you know? But you gotta wanna do that. That was electric, you know? And I think guys have just settled for offensive prowesses now, because that's what they pay for.
Mm-hmm.
But, if you can dominate a game more than one way, how special does that make you? And I've always wanted to be special.
You were, and you were also a team player. Mm-hmm. Is that, I mean, you talked about how you always enjoyed the team sports. You mm-hmm. played some tennis, mm-hmm. but it's a team sports. Mm-hmm. And it strikes me as when you talk about robbing a home run, that's as much for the pitcher as it is for you. Mm-hmm. How much... Where did that come from? Have you always been that way?
I've always been that. I've always wanted people to depend on me. Mm-hmm. And in individual sports, you depend on yourself. And to me, that's easy. In a one-on-one battle, that's easy to depend on yourself. You're like, if I dominate this dude, okay, that's me. But when you're in a team sport and having guys needing you to do certain things and depending on you to do certain things, I don't think it got any better than that. And I strived in those particular situations. I wanted to be that guy, you know. I wanted to be that guy to steal that base, to make that play. I hope they hit it in the gap. I didn't want them to hit it right to me, you know what I'm saying? I wanted to run and go get it where everybody thought that, oh, no, we didn't get it, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed that, and I wanted guys to depend on me because that brought the best out of my competitive nature. And when you're competitive, you want the spotlight. You know, you want to be that guy at the plate with the game on the line. You want to be that guy to have to steal that base or score from second or make that throw. I thrived in that situation because I wanted that.
Is that one of the reasons you do what you do now, that you're around the game so much, that you can still help out a team?
Absolutely.
What do you, your role is kind of interesting because you go
there
all
it
over
is.
The place.
That's the best word for it. Interesting. Yeah.
How do you see your job, and what do you exactly do?
I've never really defined, even though I have a title, but it's not a real definement of what I do. Because I'm a baseball junkie, mm-hmm. And playing 18 years, 19 years in the major leagues, you learn a lot about a lot of different things. I can't tell a guy how to throw a curveball, but I can tell a guy how to pitch, because I've seen it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I've seen thousands of pitches, you know, 100,000 of pitches. So my expertise and my knowledge in the game doesn't just surround my individual accomplishments. It's the totality of the game. And that's what I try to bring more than anything. It's just a total concept of how you survive in this game. And when you play 18, 19, 20 years, you can't do that just on talent, because talent balances itself off at some point. Mm-hmm. And then you have to be mentally in tune with what you're trying to do. You have to be willing to learn. You have to be willing to make changes. You have to accept the fact that I'm going to fail 70% of the time. And all of that is part of my competitive nature.
Who was it? Like, was there somebody that helped teach you the game that you kind of pattern your teaching style on?
Well, I've talked to people. I've talked to people all the time, but in the minor leagues, we didn't have coordinators mm-hmm. and specialty coaches like we have now. The guys on my team, the guys that I played with, we mentored each other. We talked the game. We scrutinized ourselves. We talked about baseball, we talked about situations, we talked about hitting, we strategized, we practiced imitating different people. Because when you're 18, 17, 18 years old, you don't know yourself.
Yeah.
And then you're thrust into this game as a professional. And now you're trying to figure out what that means and how do I act and how do I perform and all these things. So we was each other's keeper. You know, we didn't have video. So we had to rely on muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had to teach ourselves. And that's a lost art in this game, is muscle memory. Because the videos, and there's certain aspects of video that's good, but I think we're too reliant on it. I think we're too reliant on information. Most kids today can't anticipate because they have to see it and can't think it and be two steps ahead of it before it happens because they're so visually, like, in the moment now. I have to be able to see it in order to think that it's going to work. But we had to anticipate, we had to visualize things, we had to teach each other. And then when I got to the major leagues, I was very observant. Because when I came to the big leagues, you were seen and not heard. And so you watched, I mean, I watched Andre Dawson take batting practice when I was in Montreal. You know, I watched the veterans in Philadelphia, Mike Schmidt and those guys, and then you go around the league and the guy, I loved the way Dale Murphy was foul pull, the way he used his hands. He was a center fielder at that time. And so I watched guys, and then I would go back to my room and try to emulate some of the things that they did. Because you have to mold yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to take bits and pieces from each guy. I didn't watch too many left-handers because I wasn't left-handed. So. And then having Dave Parker and Ken Griffey Sr. and Dave Concepcion and all these guys in camp when I first got there taught me how to work. Taught me how to work smarter and not harder. What to look for, how to make adjustments. And it takes time, but through that process, I know how to channel that process. And understand how to get to where I wanted to go. And then when you get there, how to maintain it. Yeah, because there's a lot of guys that made it to the major league, but can you stay there for 15 years? Can you be productive for 10 straight years? All of that is what your will to learn and to understand and to change.
I can imagine being a rookie and then Dave Parker being there. You know, that was one of the most intimidating players of all time.
Absolutely.
And also just one of the coolest. Like, I all can't of think that. Of anybody
not
cooler
all of
than
that.
Dave Parker.
Mm-mm. And I remember the first time I met him was in spring training in 84, actually, when he came over. And I was so gung-ho to meet him when I got down to Tampa. And I can remember I pulled in the parking lot, and then he pulled in, and his Porsche, and the top was down, and I was like, there he is. And I went to go introduce myself, and only as Dave could say, "Oh, ugly ass boy, I know who you are. You ain't got to do yourself." And so I was like, okay, bring me down to earth, why don't you? You know what I'm saying? "Oh, big head boy, I know who you are. You ain't got to do yourself to me." So that was his way of breaking the ice and stuff like that. And he became my on the field, in the clubhouse, off the field mentor.
It's tough to beat that one. Yeah, yes. That's about as good as it gets. Then you guys had a young group. You're kind of, I guess, a little bit older than a lot of those young guys who came up, and you were able to, did you take kind of that role that you saw, and that moved you guys towards that 90?
Absolutely. We had, I was the youngest veteran, you can want to call it, but through the things that I'd gone through, learning, understanding how and where my place was, and just understanding the nuances of how to go about your job every single day. I learned that at 21 years old because I was taught that at 21 years old. And so by the time that I started to mature, I was only like 25.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed like people thought I'd been around forever.
Yeah.
And that was credit to the guys that I played with, the Buddy Bells and the Ronnie Osters. And I played with some great players, but some very knowledgeable players.
Mm-hmm.
I watched how Buddy Bell took his ground balls and Ronnie Oster and Concepcion, how they mingled and things of that nature. So, but also I also learned how they interacted with young players. They weren't intimidated by a hot stud. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
As to some guys today, if that guy's playing your position, they won't talk to him. You know, because they feel like he's pushing them out the way and stuff like that. They didn't do that. The outfielders and them guys, they didn't do that. They was like, no, you got to work on this, you got to work on that, you got to work on this. It was more of a us than I. And so I learned that. And so some of the things that I did when I became that guy was to implement the same things that they gave me. And one thing that I've always held dear in my heart is I was talking with Willie Stargell one day, and he told me, he said, E, if you learn knowledge and you don't share knowledge, you lose knowledge. And that's always resonated with me. So as I learned it, I wanted to share it so I could keep getting it and keep learning it. And even today, I try to share as much of my experiences as I can, and that's why I love the position that I'm in.
Do those guys know how good you were? Do you think they do?
I think some of them have an idea, yeah. But I don't think they really know. No.
I mean,
no.
Yeah, I think you had to see it.
Yeah, yeah. If it was now, how they do the top 10 every day, I'd be on every day with a defensive player that did something every day.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's just the times. And I think some of them have a general idea because I've been around. This will be my 8th year, so I've been around. But for the most part, they know, but they don't know.
Even when you look at the numbers, I mean, because I guess these guys came up and, like, the numbers were different in the late 90s, early 2000s. In the 80s, 25 homers, 30 homers was a huge deal.
Sure.
I mean, George Brett had 30 once. That's me being a Royals fan coming out, you know?
No, that's
yeah. I mean, but that's the thing. It's like, and there's one of the
it was a big deal to drive in 100 runs.
Yeah.
It was very difficult to drive in 100 runs.
And to do all that. The context of the game, and the game's changed so much from the 80s. Mm-hmm. What are the biggest changes you've seen? What's the difference between the game that you played in the 80s and 90s?
The acceptance of mediocrity. And the game is crowning, or I won't say crowning, but accepting the fact that you can do this and be considered successful. You can be one dimension and make a lot of money in the game today. Back then, if you was one dimensional, you couldn't even climb up the ladder hardly, unless you were super extraordinary in that one particular phase of your game. The way the game was, in order to even get on the field, you had to be multi-talented. Especially as a black player, you had to be multi-talented.
Really?
Absolutely. Because the competition, was the majority of your great players was in outfield. So how was you gonna break in with Foster, Geronimo, and Griffey? Thank God for free agency. Because that pushed a lot of guys back to AAA for 2 or 3 years who were great players. I mean, 350 in AAA with 29 and 101 and gotta go back. You seen the competitions were so fierce. That you had to take pride in all facets of the game, because the guy who you was competing with could do 4 out of 5 or 3 out of 5 very well. So you couldn't come in and think I was going to compete with him and only do 1 out of 5. It was no comparison. And so, for whatever reason, we've of accepted the fact that guys can be put in certain situations after being mediocre. And it's not a knock on those guys, that's just the time that it is. You can say it's not an overabundance of talent in the game today. When you see a Mike Trout and you see how talented he is, and he's very talented, but the things that he's doing, we did already. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But when he was trying to do 30-50, it was me and Barry Bonds that already done that. You know what I'm saying? But you see the excitement of him doing it now because you haven't seen it in so long. Yeah. And so it's like, wow, Mike is super talented, which he is. But we was all like that. You know what I'm saying? You had a gang of Mike Trouts in the '80s. You know what I'm saying? But I'm saying that to say that it's not as many.
Why?
Well, it's probably because they're playing football and basketball. Back then, it was more of us chose baseball.
Especially the African Americans?
Yes, because as a black man, we failed our sons. Because, see, baseball is a sport that has to be introduced to you by a male figure. Either your uncle, your grandfather, your father. Somebody gonna play catch. There's not too many black kids who are gonna play catch with their mother. So historically, baseball is a sport. If you just listen to the stories, I can remember me and my dad, or me and my grandpa, or me and my great uncle who was a baseball advocate, took me to the games, or he played catch with me. As a black man, and I don't have any sons, but I categorize myself in that group because I'm black, is that we failed because we have so many single parents. That male is either in jail or he's on drugs or he's dead. And that mother has been left to raise these boys. And black women don't know baseball. They don't have time to go play catch. And so it's about convenience.
You can go out to basketball courts.
You can play by yourself and you can go do a lot of things. And so they picked that up at a younger age. And then less than 4% of blacks play college baseball.
Yeah.
And so if you have that kid who's a talented kid, but his mama can't pay for him to go to college, which sport you want him to play?
Well, there's no full scholarships for baseball.
And so which one you gonna push? Mm-hmm. That's the problem. That Eric Davis, that Daryl Strawberry, that Andre Dawson, that still exists. He's just the point guard, which I played point. He's the wide receiver. He's the tailback. If you look at how great a football player Tim Raines was, one of the best running backs in Florida.
Oh, man.
But Ricky Henderson was all-state football guy in Northern California. So we all did our thing, but somebody or someone led us to this game.
Is it too far gone?
No, but we have to get it at the grassroots again. Uh-huh. It's because even when I was playing high school basketball, I still played with the Reds, had a winter league team. And they played like UCLA and SC and these guys on Saturdays and Sundays. And so when the scout saw me, he brought me out after basketball games and on Saturdays and Sundays, I would play baseball with the Reds winter league team. So they kept me in tune. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Even though it was basketball season, I still played baseball on the weekends. And then if it was football, I played basketball on the weekends. And it was just a revolving circle, but they always kept me in tune with baseball just in case I wanted to make that transition. We don't do that anymore as a whole like it used to be.
How do we reverse that trend?
Well, that's the first thing is MLB has to get committed to developing American baseball. And it's not just blacks. So we're not getting the great white players either.
Right.
And so we have to make a financial commitment in America, just like we made a financial commitment in Latin America. Every team has an academy there. Every team don't have one here. This is our sport. This is our thing. And I'm for you develop it anywhere you want to. Well, why would you develop so much and spend so much there when you're assuming that we're going to still have the love of the game here? It's baseball, hot dog, apple pie, and Chevrolet. That's America. But somewhere along that line, we've lost the connectiveness to American baseball. And we have to get that back. But it has to be a financial commitment where I'm going to invest in America's future in baseball again. That's the start.
You've been out to the Reds new complex out there. I mean, that's a small start. Mm-hmm. What is it? What do you? I've seen Dave Parker's out there a lot. That means
it, actually that's not the Reds complex.
That's right.
That's the Urban Youth Academy's complex.
Right.
That's through Major League Baseball.
They've done a lot there, but you need those more. Mm-hmm. Is that a nice start? Have you been out there? I mean, have you seen that facility?
I've been out there. I've seen the one in Compton, California. and all those things. I've been around that whole thing for a long time. But it's a nice start.
Right.
But once you start the engine, you can't let it idle. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You have to put it in drive. And you have to drive around. And driving takes gas. Gas takes money. That's why I said you have to make a financial commitment to doing it and doing it well.
There's so much money in this game, it's not going there.
No. Because it goes back to when they say, sing the song, "We Are the World," and they say the kids are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. That's in all aspects of life. Yeah. Sports in general.
Eric Davis, if he's coming up in South Central today, where would you be? Where would your future lie?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. With the same talents that I have, oh my goodness. Oh. I would probably be the first guy that probably would be a lottery pick in all three sports. But, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I was mad at my mom and dad. I told them they should have had me at 82 instead of 62. You know, they should, you know what I'm saying? I used to kid my dad all the time. You should have held on to that one for about 20 years, dude. You know what I mean? But I don't know. It's all food for thought.
Yeah.
But when I look at a lot of the high school kids today, I was far more advanced than them. Far more advanced than them. Way more advanced than them.
Is that just athletic gift, or was it?
No, because we was more creative because of the things that we had to do to occupy our time. We played over the line. And, you know what I'm saying? I learned to pull the ball because we didn't have enough guys to play, so we would play right field and center field is closed.
Yeah.
So you had to learn bat angles and bat control. Now they're learning thumb control and thumb angles. You know, we spent a lot of time outside. I mean, I was so good at rundowns because we played pickle.
Yep.
And all of those facets of the game comes into fruition when you sign a professional contract.
Yeah.
So I was way ahead of the game just because of the era that I came in allowed us to be outside and not stuff. We did everything not to be in the house. You know, we didn't have cable and flat screens and all of these type of things. So we did everything to stay out the house. So you had to be creative in order to enjoy yourself outside.
I just went the other way because our backyard, if I pulled, it was on the train tracks, and I couldn't get that ball back.
Exactly.
So I was always inside out.
But whatever you did, you became good at it because you worked at it. You know what I'm saying? And not to say that that's going to lead you to a Hall of Fame,
right. But
your understanding of the game, of learning how to do what I needed to do, that comes from just being outside and playing. We hit wiffle balls. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You did so much.
I got to say, my wiffle ball.
There you go. Then you got that thing.
That roll. I do that in the backyard all the time. Me and my friends, we'd always be different guys.
I love it.
You do it.
Yeah.
But, man, that roll was,
Where
did that come from? Because it exuded cool, calm, and it just seemed like, I don't care what you do.
Well, that's how I felt. A lot of times, that's how I felt. But it just relaxed me. Because I didn't always hit that way. Because when I was coming through the minor leagues, I hit like a lot of these guys hit up here, up here, up here.
Yeah.
And I was good enough to get away with it till you get to a certain point. And it was a couple guys that talked to me, and Billy DeMars, who was our hitting coach then in Cincinnati, actually suggested it. And then I worked on it, and then it just fell into place. But he didn't work on me with just twirling it, but it was just a thing of keeping my hands loose. It was keeping me relaxed. You know, because before, if you stand there, you holding the bat like this, it's heavy. And then you got to hold it tight so that makes you flex. And when you flex, you're not as relaxed and you're not as loose. And so I was doing it, and I was like, let me just relax. And I did it like this, and it went right there, and I just.
It just looked so, it looked like, I don't care what you do on the mound. I don't care what you throw to me. You're not going to get me. It doesn't bother me.
Right. I was listening to Vince Scully one day on some things. And he was calling one of my games, and I was just looking at some of my highlights, and he was calling one of my games. I was up at the plate, and I was doing this, and his comment was that I was sitting there like I was a lion and you was trying to throw a pork chop by me. He just like finna let you see if you can throw this pork chop and he gonna jump out and grab it. But that was just how relaxed I was.
You didn't miss many pork chops.
No. I was after them pork chops, absolutely.
Eric, thank you so much. That was awesome. I took more of your time than I told you I would.
Oh, that's
so
okay. I could talk baseball all day. I love baseball.
I absolutely loved talking to you about this. It was awesome. It was amazing. So I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
Thanks. See, I told you. It was really a lot of fun and quite special, honestly. So I hope you enjoyed that half as much as I did. For now, that's about it. If you have any questions, you can always email me crosecrans@inquire.com, or hit me up on Twitter @ctrent. You follow us at cincinnati.com. If you could rate and review, and we've gotten several of those on iTunes, and that's a big help. I think we're also on Stitcher. I mean, whatever, you've gotten this so far, so you should find it. But we're SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, iTunes, all the such. And hopefully I'll figure out a better format for this, but most importantly, I think, are these discussions and with people, and I hope you enjoyed as much as I did, because I think this kind of exemplifies what I want this show to be, I hope it's what you want, and if it's not, let me know. But otherwise, it's been great, and hopefully we can keep it up throughout the season. So thanks for joining us, and